My conversation today is with Tamlyn Young, a lecturer and artist who is creating place-based narrative through the medium of augmented reality art. So today I get to talk to Tamlyn Young. Tamlyn is an artist specialising, well, certainly in her current project, on augmented reality art and storytelling. And it's this project that allows us to get together to hold this conversation. But that's enough from me, Tamlyn. Oh, tell us about yourself.
Hi, Chris. So I've lived in Ireland now since 2014. I was born and raised in South Africa. And I work as a lecturer at the Limerick School of Art and Design. I've been in Limerick a good while now.
How long have you lived in Ireland?
I moved directly from South Africa to Limerick. So that's 11 years now. Limerick has been home. I've made a son here. I've got a career here.
Oh, yeah. You're well settled, right embedded in. Ireland just takes over, doesn't it?
Gosh, I came for 3 months. And, that's life at other plans.
We're going to be talking about your project today. What are the interests and the studies, the journey that led you to this particular project?
Been quite a long journey. And like all the best journeys, you're not quite sure. You don't even realize where the journey is leading. But just reflecting back, I did all of my studying in South Africa. So I studied visual arts and graphic design. Then I didn't feel like I fully belonged in either of those worlds. And so I went on to do a master's degree in illustration, which is a good bridge between art and design. Mm-hmm. And during the master's, I started experimenting mm-hmm. with animated illustrations and interactive books. I began exploring ways to tell stories that combine illustration and technology.
Oh, kind of interactive books.
Mm-hmm. I guess the early interactive books would have been those analog ones that we all played with as kids, with the pull-outs and the pop-ups. I used to love The Jolly Postman and books like that.
Oh, yes.
And that really got me fascinated in this idea that books can immerse the reader and engage them in the unfolding of the story.
Oh, yeah. One you've been given can lead you so much into making your own stories. That's what I think is so good about that type of book.
It allows the reader to bring themselves to the story rather than just passively absorbing it, I feel. And so this way of storytelling really interests me. I guess that's kind of fed into all of my projects since then, leading up to this current project looking at augmented reality, where I started a PhD in UL, studying at University of Limerick, looking at place-based storytelling with augmented reality. And again, it's along that same line of creating a story that can immerse the viewer in it.
It's really taking the idea of that interactive book to a whole new level.
Yes, and now, technology-wise, I think stories have always been told with the most cutting-edge technology available at the time. I think whenever any new technology comes in, it's up to creative people to use it in an interesting way.
It's a good point. We'll talk about it a bit more later. So you've been working on this project for quite some time now.
It began a good few years back, I'd say since 2020. And even before that, when I first arrived in Limerick, I was really interested in the stories that were kind of embedded in the city. Then I came across this augmented reality technology. And so here was this technology suddenly made accessible to artists to create with. So yeah, it was a whole new world of possibilities.
Now we'll talk a lot more about augmented reality. We'll ask you to explain it as we go along. Now, I'm not really familiar with Limerick. I've been through it rather than to it, but I gather it's a pretty varied and interesting place to live.
Yes, it's. I think interesting is a good word, because I will say that my relationship with Limerick has grown in these 11 years that I've been here. I remember hearing that I was coming to Limerick and hearing just the word Limerick sounds so lyrical and poetic and playful, and I drove in from the bus from Dublin Airport, and it was winter. It was 2014, and there were still a lot of buildings abandoned and boarded up. Ireland was still recovering from the crash.
And it took a while.
Just
took a
the
while.
Name Limerick and the appearance of Limerick just didn't match in my brain. And it was very grey. And it's become, over these 11 years, to see Limerick evolve has been incredible. And the way that I can best describe it is just, it's that mix, I think, of cultures. It's the layers of history, none of which have been homogenized or hidden away in a museum. They're allowed to overlap. They're allowed to form parts of the everyday lives of the city's inhabitants. And I feel like this overlapping and the intersecting of all these elements generates a creative energy, which it's maybe not immediately evident. I think it's Limerick maybe still has that kind of a reputation of its past, being kind of an industrial, maybe a slightly rougher city. But as soon as you can tap into that kind of creative edges of the city, you find loads of community-based, community-centered creative projects, really fascinating subcultures. And I've grown to love Limerick's rough edges. It isn't gentrified. It's not sanitized. It's not afraid to give out. And I think, it makes it, and it's full of students as well, because, you know, there's the university and the art college.
Well, it certainly nowadays has a reputation for creative arts and interesting projects and ideas. You sound like you've got a good relationship with the city.
I think it's through working here. I was living right in the smack in the middle of the city centre for the first 10 years that I was here. And the things you see through your window living in the city centre, it's just, it's fascinating. It's like watching a movie all day, because you see everything going on outside and around you. And yeah, I really love that about Limerick.
Now, of course, you're on the estuary, but you're basically Limerick's at the Shannon Estuary. And of course, I live at the other end of the navigable river in Carrick-on-Shannon, or just outside Carrick-on-Shannon. So I'm much more familiar with the river at its source. For me, it's a small river. It's as far as any boat can go. And after that, it becomes a stream going right back to the Shannon pot. But nevertheless, that means that this conversation is effectively spanning the length of the river.
I've always, no matter where I've lived in the city, I've always had a view of some part of the Shannon. I remember first arriving in the city, we were living near a canal, which I thought was the Shannon River. And then going on a walk around the city and being shown the actual Shannon River, and I was just blown away by its power and its width, and it's the scale of this body of water. Yeah, I guess the river down this side was used, at the moment it's used recreationally by kayakers, by canoers. I don't think it's used commercially anymore, but I guess that where we are down here, we've got the dock, so that used to be there used to be a lot of industry down here, and the river used to be a big part of that.
I always think of it as the backbone of Ireland. Now, a couple of years ago, there was a plan to try and get the river recognised as a legal entity, the entire river, as a whole, rather than separate sections. After all, it does go through 11 counties, and it is an important river. Unfortunately, for reasons that I really can't go into here now, it fell and the group dispersed. But I do think it's a good idea, and it would be great if the plan could be reignited sometime.
It's as you say, here in Limerick, it is such a central part of the city. I mean, it's the reason that the city became a city. It's the reason the Vikings stopped here and created the first settlement that became the city. Because it's close to the estuary, it has the tides really affect it. And you can often actually smell the ocean. The ocean reaches right up all the way into Limerick sometimes when the tide is coming in.
Well, anyway, look, let's go on to talk about your project. Some time ago now, you sent me this brilliantly clear and beautiful presentation of the project that we're discussing today. So I'll put a copy of the presentation that you sent me on the website so that anyone listening can see exactly what we're talking about. But what I want to start by is quoting what you wrote in the first section when you introduced yourself. You said, "My practice explores the synergistic potentials of analog and digital to create an immersive narrative experience for the viewer." Now, I know that's really what you've already been saying. It grabbed my attention. But could you tell us more? Because I know what AR, augmented reality, is in theory, but I'm not sure I know very much about what it really means in practice.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of the time, augmented reality is used quite interchangeably with virtual reality. And I think that's probably the first important distinction to draw, where the aim of augmented reality isn't to remove the viewer from the space that they're standing in, but it's to layer or to place a layer of digital content over that space. And this is where the place-based storytelling comes in, because you can literally be standing in a place, for example, where a historic event played out. And by activating the augmented reality, you're still very grounded in the place. You're not zoomed off into another world, but you're just able to access another dimension or another level of story that's connected to that place. There are so many uses for augmented reality, and in fairness, its uses as a creative medium has only been used as such probably since 2017 onwards. It became the technology available to artists like myself who don't have a background in coding and programming. Before that, it's been used to train military fighters to place IKEA furniture in people's houses. So the technology has been around for a good while, but now that it is accessible as a tool for artists to tell stories, my interest in it is this idea that it allows you to tell a story about a place in a place.
I've come across it occasionally in museums, but I think what you're doing is much more immediate and pictorial in terms of its narrative, isn't it?
I think, Chris, you're right in saying, I mean, it has been used in museum contexts, and I think it's a wonderful addition to reinvigorate museums and to really kind of tell the history of. I think for my personal interest, I'm really interested in the streets. I'm really interested the city and the stories that are hidden in the abandoned buildings and in the graffiti and the street art. To me, that's the kind of museum that I'm interested in. And so I guess my interests lie in how to use augmented reality in these spaces that we walk through and live in every day, but maybe we just don't pause for long enough.
Yeah, no, that's why I brought up the museums, because I think it's so interesting. But we tend to think of these things as enrichment activities when we're already in an educative environment. But to have that possibility, it's like meeting someone interesting in the street who's able to tell you this wonderful story. It's like being able to have a storyteller there in the street where you just happen to bump into and the story gets told and opened out to you, except you're using the visual art to just impress the imagination and get it working. That's how I understand it. Is that about right?
In that sense, it's quite literally augmenting the experience, because it's telling a story that you can use engage the senses in multiple ways. There's audio, there's visual, there's moving images. The way that the experience can be created is that the viewer can actually walk through different layers of the story. So maybe rather than reading a story in a book, you can walk through the story with your body and it becomes a more embodied experience.
I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Just to build on that for a second, is I think taking it out of as you say, like an educational environment such as a museum or even an art gallery, and bringing it out into public space, it really democratizes that way of storytelling, where I know that there are many ways to view an augmented reality experience, and I'm still working with kind of the old school way, where it's using a smartphone to load the augmented reality experience. And the reason that I'm working with a smartphone and not like the HoloLens or the devices launched by Apple is that everyone has access to them. And I think if a story is in the streets and it can be access through the device that you have in your pocket, then it's something that really can be accessible.
Yes, it's accessible to anyone anytime they want it, rather than having to use a specific expensive interface.
That's exactly it.
And I think it's brilliant. Now, another comment you made, and you've already touched on this, is about the capacity for AR to preserve stories that form a city's cultural heritage and to transform how people perceive and interact with the place. Now, I think you've already covered that, but because I found myself really excited about those statements. But is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, just to kind of to say something about it in a nutshell, I think that the difference between spaces and places is stories, especially in an urban environment where there's so much information being bombarded at us, so many liminal spaces. We pass through the city in kind of a haze. We have a destination, we want to get there. And a lot of the time we don't pause, we don't even see the spaces that we're walking past. They're just spaces. But as soon as you can connect a story or a history to that space, it becomes a place.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. In a more simple way, one of my favourite activities with primary children as part of local history project is to take them for a surprise walk in the streets where they go every day. But instead of staring at the ground or in shop windows, I tell them to look up and maybe they'll notice old chimneys or roof patterns or indications that the shops were completely different perhaps long ago. Yes, the history isn't quite so obvious at the everyday street level.
Absolutely, that's exactly right. And even I do something with my students who are university students, so slightly older, but we draw a circle on a map and they have to navigate that circle on the map with a camera and they have to get lost in the city, walk down the alleyways that you wouldn't usually walk down, photograph things. And also when you're walking, I guess, with a camera, you're seeing things in a different way as well. So yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at, that idea of just seeing these ordinary everyday spaces through fresh eyes.
And I think this is why I find your project so exciting. You're inviting people to read the stories in the landscape. Yes, the stories are always there, but you're not looking for them. Let's focus on the story that you chose to take into what you refer to as place-based narrative. I do think that's a brilliant choice of words. It's so simple, but it's absolutely solid. But there was another statement that you posed next, and I think this one is really central. What you said was, it must be designed around the story, centred on the message rather than the medium. It must be underpinned with a compelling narrative. And then you added this great question, what story wants to be told? So I love the fact that you're going to look for the story that needs to be told. So how did you decide?
It was a question I walked around with for the good part of a year. I had created a few augmented reality prototypes on some of the abandoned buildings in Limerick, creating some drawings that told a little story about that building and what it was. My idea was to create an augmented reality art wall through the city to get people to pause and kind of look at these abandoned buildings and maybe question why are they abandoned when we're experiencing a housing crisis in Ireland. Also just to get them to be made visible again. And the feedback I got that project from some of my supervisors, that's all very well and good, but you're only one person and you're only telling the story that you know or have experienced. And the advice I got was to find a story that's already connected to the place and the culture, even if the culture don't even know that it exists. And so that was my question for probably about 9 months. What story wants to be told? I had it written on my hand.
I was
just waiting for the story. And
some stories just yell at you. Really do.
And I didn't have the story. So I had the technology. I had the desire to do this project, but I need.
And the story you told was Shinnan.
Yes. I was listening to a talk by Mankon Mangan, whose name I'm probably mispronouncing still. And he was talking, I was reading his book, Listen to the Land Speak. And listening to a talk he gave on that book, and he recounted the story of the River Shannon. And I was out for a walk at the time, and I just got that feeling in my heart, that story. This is the story that wants to be told. It was a great relief. So this is the story. But again, how do you tell such an ancient story in a way that honors the story?
I came to Ireland 35 years ago, and the story came and found me. But it bothered me. It always bothered me slightly because the story that was known about Shinnan 35 years ago was basically the one put together by Eugene O'Curry in the 19th century, and he combined it with another story. There's a load of stuff on story archaeology about this, but basically he kind of combined it with the Boand and the story of her river, the River Boyne. But he told it in a style that, well, was appropriate for a 19th century telling, particularly in its attitudes towards women. His version wasn't about a young poet seeking to gain the highest powers of poetic inspiration, which she had a right to do, and find the well that lay somewhere, maybe under the sea. rather than to be a disobedient woman going near a well that was meant only for males, wise men. And I kept thinking, but, you know, there must be more to this story, and yet it does feel fit with a certain type of European folklore. And there are lots of stories about wells where a disobedient woman goes near the well. There's one near here, and the story is she took the lid off the well, the water rose up until a quick-thinking man took his scythe and cut her feet off, and then the water stopped. I know there are similar river stories. The Severn, the longest river in the UK, also has an origin story of a woman merging with the water to form the river. But the Shinnan story just went on bothering me. It somehow didn't fit in with themes found in other early medieval Irish stories. But after spending time in studying the Dinhélachas poetry with my expert colleague Isolde Carmody, we got to see a very different story. The young poet, most gifted of her people, who sought the well of inspiration to aid her people. She does, though, also merge with the newly formed river. The other problem was the name Shinnan, which is the oldest name. It gets masculinized to make the Shannon, it gets mixed up with Old One, it becomes lots of different saints' names. I'm so glad it's taken a long time, but this story, which is the oldest form of the story, is now back.
Well, it was actually, after hearing Mancon telling the story, and yes, telling this version of the story in which Shinnan is not a disobedient, naughty girl who disobeys and is punished, but a brave and creative woman who merges with the river and the knowledge and insight that it embodies.
That's right.
And that's what really hooked me to the story. And contacting Mancon, he actually was the reason that I found the story Archaeology. And so they're listening to your podcast, that episode.
I'll put up links to the episodes and the articles and translations on Shinnan on the podcast website page, rather than going through them all here. And this story has inspired others too. In the last few years, a physicist, Professor Ralph Kenner, was unhappy with a new sculpture inspired by the river god from the Custom House in Dublin, erected in Athlone, his hometown. It was supposed to represent the Shannon River. He then founded the Arts for Shinnan competitions and the Eyrie competitions, and was very prominent in helping to get this story renown. And in the end, we wrote a paper together on the marvellous story of Shinnan. Again, I'll put the links to these on the podcast website page on Story Archaeology. Yes, I think the River Shannon does have a story that needs to be told.
Well, yes, and I think especially now when the ecosystems and the ecology of the Shannon is so at risk with these data ticks and wanting to rechannel the Shannon, and where its fragile ecology is under threat. I think, as you say in your podcast, a lot of these ancient tales were all about the idea that we're so interconnected with the ecology of the landscape, and if we mess with it, we upset a balance. And so a lot of them are talking about maintaining a balance, and I think this is the perfect time for that story to resurface.
That's why I love what you said, because for 35 years that story has been yelling at me, going, I've got to be told. And it's great to hear the way that this story is being used now and is back, and it's tremendous.
It's important that it's retold, but it's told in a way that, again, is accessible to a new generation, because I think the story has had so many iterations, always speaking to the values of the time.
I am so glad you said that, because it reminds me of something else you wrote in that presentation that just rang a whole rake of bells for me. You said the preservation of the story depends on it being transmitted in a modality that's relevant and engaging to a current generation. Now, as a storyteller, something I know is that the material has to be appropriate to your audience. And that's exactly what you're saying.
Well, I guess there have been so many versions of this really ancient story transmitted through the ages, first orally, then in a written form. And each version has reflected the values and the culture of the time using the technology available to its time. And so the idea that this version of the story would be told through the medium of augmented reality illustration, kind of a digital storytelling medium. I'm hoping that in this way, the technology can serve the story.
And that's why I'm so excited about what you're doing. You see, well, place-based narrative, well, that's what I would call modern Dintianicus.
I was blown away when you, by that point, because it's, isn't it amazing how things happen?
It made my day when I read what you'd written. Just to remind listeners sharing our conversation, the metrical Dintianicus, the Law of Place Names, is a collection of poems written down about the 11th to 12th century, but clearly collated from a much, much earlier oral tradition. And these poems are one of Ireland's greatest treasures. But let's get back to your project. What I liked is your term place-based narrative is actually a perfect way of describing Dintianicus, the law of prominent places. Those poets and monks, the law keepers of their time, recognised how the tales retained elements of local cultural identity. And that's equally true today, as you say. So I really think you've succeeded with your approach. You've created a form of current and relevant Dintianicus.
It's actually such a wonderful thought that you've just articulated there. And it makes you realize that these projects that we engage with, they have to be bigger than ourselves and to be relevant to the world. And it's so wonderful that that's actually the way that things have turned out.
No, this is why I was so struck with it. And the other thing you said earlier, you mentioned that storytellers always use the best technology they've got, the best thing at the time. So if you go back to medieval or early medieval times, early Irish stories always included performative elements. It wasn't just written down. You know, there was music, dramatic telling, and of course those stories were saved for feasts and other special events such as oinochs, where people gathered together. There were the stories ready to be told using the best technology they had at the time. So I think you're spot on.
That's wonderful. That's again a wonderful connection that you've made that I hadn't even considered. But yes, that is exactly what the technology of augmented reality is, well, used through this this platform, used through the smartphone platform. That's really what it allows, immersion. Performance as well, because you've got to move your body. The viewer of the story has to move their body through the space in a way that the story is revealed.
I was just struck by the statements that you made in that presentation. I was thinking, yeah, you're absolutely spot on. And you could use the old words. These are Dintianicus. They're the law of prominent place. Places, and they're used in a performative manner. It is absolutely in line with early Irish storytelling. It's brilliant. And of course, I have a special connection with Shannon, so I'm always delighted. And I also love stories that you go, no, that one was misused. I don't like a story that's been abused. Let's go and put it right.
Yeah. Well, this story, it's a slow project for me because it was begun in an academic context, like in the context of a PhD, and I realized that it's almost impossible to be creative when you're doing it for me anyway.
You have to be more precise, don't you?
I think for anything creative to happen, you kind of have to be able to catch things out of the corner of your mind in a way. And when you're trying to look directly at something that has to be achieved using scientific research methods, it just doesn't come. And so I've shelved the PhD part of it for now, and I'm really just focusing on creating the illustrations and the animations for the augmented reality part of the story.
Well, I'm sure the academic side will come back because it's brilliant, but I think, yeah, this is exactly what I was going to ask you. Okay, what happens next? What are you going to do with the project? Or where are you going with the project? That's probably a better way to pose the question.
So I was just to clarify, the project is not yet finished. My big vision for the project, and I'm trying to do it all alone, so that's why it's being so slow at the moment, was to have a small booklet of the illustrated story, which also has each of the seven scenes would have a animated narrated scene. And then also to have the story that you can walk. So here in Limerick, there is a walk from the city centre along the Shannon to the University of Limerick. And it's a wonderful walk because it's used by schools who go on nature trails. It's used by joggers. It's used by people walking their dog. It's just this wonderfully vibrant path along song, the Shannon. But I wonder how often people actually pause and take the Shannon into consideration. Like, they're busy running, they're busy walking their dog. And the idea that I have, which I still need to try and manifest, is creating a format of the story that you walk through along this route. So with the idea that there would be sites along the walk that you can stop and you can trigger. The story is told in seven scenes, and you can trigger each of the seven scenes at a specific significant site along the walk. So you're essentially walking through the story, and through it, you're actually pausing and recognizing the fact that you're walking alongside the River Shannon, and you're not just, it's not just the thing that you drop your candy wrapper next to, or you you pick some plants beside, but you actually maybe go away with a bit of a deeper understanding and consciousness that there's a river there.
So it's going to need points along the way. Would you have signs, or I want you to describe it. How would you see it actually physically in place?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and that's the question that I'm asking myself as well, because I'm not a programmer, I'm working within the limits of the augmented reality apps that I currently have access to. And so ideally, in the booklet version of the story, there would be a map as well. So the book is almost like a little handbook that you would walk along the river with. And you would see that at certain points you could pause. If you stand in this place, story will appear. Alternatively, it might be a signposted walk where there would be seven signs, actual physical signposts along the way. The technology is evolving slowly to where just by standing in a place, the phone reads where you are using the GPS, and it would load the experience automatically for you. So just by standing at that site, holding up your phone, the experience would load. But I think we're still quite a long way away from that working reliably.
And also, people would have to plan to take the walk. I was thinking if people might not come across it in the right order otherwise. So
yes,
you'd need a signposted or a planned, mapped walk for the story.
Yeah, definitely. There would have to be some kind of a map. And then in that way, I'm imagining, and now this is again just what I'm envisaging, it would be great if there were school kids walking along that, and it becomes part of their nature walk. And so they pause and they look, they listen to the story, they maybe discuss some of the, you know, some of what's happening in the Shannon River. So maybe there could be activities linked to the story, and in that way it could be used.
Oh, that's a great idea. There's so many primary school or even secondary school activities that I can think of. Environmental ones, local nature, local history. And what about creative writing activities, particularly poetry? After all, the Shannon story was first told in poetry. Well, I'm sure that's the way I would work with it. But it's your project. It's up to you.
That's a wonderful idea. Yes. But I love that idea. Yes. The idea that it's not just, it doesn't just become about the ecology of the area, which is important, but the idea that it can be actually sit down by the side of the Shannon and write something. And
I'm sorry. I teach creative writing to primary children, so I'm afraid my head's going a bit wild with ideas. I apologise.
Of course, that would be wonderful. And the other offer I've had, and I've been discussing with
Mary
Conlon, curator at the Dock in Carrick-on-Shannon, has invited me to exhibit the illustrated story in the reception area of the art gallery up there, which is a wonderful opportunity because, as you say, it's right up near the source of the Shannon. There's so many activities that are based on the river up your side of the country.
And I'm sure there are local schools who would be very interested. So I think it's a brilliant idea.
So actually now in chatting with you, I think that it would just be amazing if the project could live up there in the Dock gallery in Carrick-on-Shannon, and could also live down here by the estuary in Limerick.
Oh, definitely. You can hear that I'm really excited about this project. I've been really looking forward to talking to you about it ever since I heard from you. There are so many possibilities, and I really think it's a model that could be used for stories in any place. What we need is place-based narratives all over Ireland.
And I mean, you, Chris, you and your researchers, it's the reason that this version of the story caught my attention, you and Mancon Mangan. So yeah, I have you to thank for it.
It's brilliant. No, I'm delighted. I really am. Oh, and when the event at the Dock in Carrick-on-Shannon is set up, we really must talk again and put up another post, because It is a very interesting and exciting project.
I don't know if I sent you an image of the stretch of the story. Maybe I did. Because if you'd like to put that up on your blog, it might be worthwhile for people to see what the story looks like.
The designs are beautiful and really capture the spirit of the story of Shinan. So anyone who's joined our conversation today will be able to view them all for yourselves on storyarchaeology.com. You know, I predict that this is just the beginning of this project. I think it's got a river's journey to flow yet.
It sure does. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, thank you. I know we'll talk about this again as it develops.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. It was such a pleasure. It's so wonderful to actually chat with somebody about all of this when, you know, you're in your own head about it for so long, and then you have such interesting insights and suggestions. So.
Well, it's a long journey. Projects like this are long journeys, and it's well on its way. You know, it really is. It's tremendous. So you can hear I'm impressed. I really am. Anyway, look, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Stories in the Landscape conversation. Remember, on www.storyarchaeology.com, you will be able to access the whole archive of Story Archaeology podcasts. You can also explore a wide selection of my audio and video stories for children, as well as a range of project and support materials for schools. Also, discover information on a number of international arts events and competitions with which Story Archaeology is closely linked. There will be another Stories in the Landscape conversation along soon.